This is Solidarity News on Radio Labour.
This is a Radio Labour World Report recorded on Friday, November 19th, 2021. I'm Mark Boulanger. In the report this week, the pandemic has cost women workers $800 billion in lost income. How unions are fighting for an international law banning sexual violence and harassment at work. The Labour Start report about union events and singing.
A woman's place is in her union. We organize and stand for equal rights.
This is Radio Labour. Women workers have been hit especially hard by the pandemic. C. Marie Ainsborough has a report.
Because of the pandemic, women around the world have lost $800 billion in income. That's the combined GDP of 98 countries. To better understand the situation and to devise solutions for moving forward, the International Labour Organization and Sweden jointly sponsored a webinar on what needs to be done to help women workers as countries counter the effects of the pandemic. One of the speakers in the webinar was Kathy Feingold, the International Director of the AFL-CIO Labour Federation in the United States. She mentions the International Trade Union Confederation. The ITUC is the organization which represents national union centers such as the AFL-CIO at the world level.
The pandemic really brought together a set of crises. They were intertwined. Income, gender, racial inequality, the climate crisis. We have everyone at the COP, and I'm just getting the readouts about the work we've done to get just transition pledges, which I think will be key to women workers. We also saw attacks on civil society spaces and democracy, which has really impacted women workers in many countries around the world. So all of these crises have had an impact on gender equality. The numbers, we've already heard some people talk about them. The global snapshot is pretty enormous. Women lost around $800 billion in income during the pandemic. It's the combined GDP of 98 countries. So we know that women were on the forefront of really being impacted on what happened in the pandemic. Now, the question is, as governments have been talking about what to do, were women at the table helping to shape those policies? Gender-sensitive policies that have been going forward. But I would say, if you look at the global snapshot, it's been quite mixed. Many women still are not at the table. We've seen large differences across sectors of work and regions. The Americas region actually saw the highest decline in women's employment, followed by Arab states. And when we think about how many women workers depend on the informal economy of work, one thing I want to point out is when you close civil society spaces, when there are attacks on democracy, many workers can't even get out of the house to work. And so some of the reports we saw were that many governments used the pandemic as a way to justify further restricting worker and human rights. Over 150 countries enacted provisions limiting freedom of assembly, which meant informal economy workers, women selling in the streets, they had a harder time, domestic workers, getting to work. And so what we are seeing is governments taking advantage of the pandemic, hopefully Sweden and the U.S., to think about building back better, as Thea says, about thinking of a transformative economic model. And at the same time, we see many countries using the pandemic as an excuse to close civil society spaces and make it harder for workers. And we see that around the world. Before the pandemic, we already know that women already perform three times as much unpaid care work as men. And this has just grown. I want to bring in the issue of gender-based violence. This was linked to what has been going on during the pandemic, a rise in gender-based violence. And out of the 580 fiscal and economic measures created by countries to support businesses, only 70 of them focused on strengthening women's economic security. So we have a long way to go before we get that transformative feminist agenda spread around the world. Let me tell you what we're calling for in the global labor movement. I also wear another hat at the International Trade Union Confederation as deputy president. And we've come together demanding the creation of millions of decent care jobs, the formalization of informal care jobs, recognizing the rights of all care workers to decent work and working conditions, the right to collective bargaining, access to public quality care services, and we've heard this from others, investing in care, health, education, child care. Millions of new jobs can be created in the care economy. I want to highlight a few good examples, because we've said some negative examples. Here's some good examples of what we'd like to see replicated around the world. Many governments have actually increased the compensation of healthcare workers, many of them women, through allowances and additional grants, either on a permanent basis like France or temporary basis, Argentina, Canada, Italy, and other countries. Australia and South Korea increased the availability of childcare facilities for unemployed parents in low-income families.
Unions are lobbying their governments to ratify a law created by the International Labor Organization on sexual violence and harassment at work. Many are working to support the ILO's Convention C-190 even before their countries ratify it. Here again is Seymourie Ainsborough.
Unions around the world are taking advantage of an international treaty banning sexual harassment and violence at work. The treaty is Convention C-190 of the International Labor Organization. The ILO is the United Nations agency specialized in matters of work in the world. To come into effect, a treaty must be ratified by a country. But unions are using the existence of the treaty to fight sexual harassment and violence even before ratification. Shauna Bader Blau of Solidarity Center in the United States recently highlighted C-190 in the center's podcast. Ms. Bader Blau is the host of the podcast and also executive director of the center. She talked to the head of the Department of Women and Youth of the Nigerian Labor Congress.
Even before governments act on C-190, some unions are taking steps to ensure workers benefit from the incredibly powerful rights it provides. In Nigeria, where unions are also making C-190 real, textile workers, market vendors, and others are gaining a stronger voice at work. My guest today, Rita Guit, will tell us how. Rita leads the Nigeria Labor Congress's Department of Women and Youth and is the secretary of the NLC's National Women's Commission. Rita Guit in Nigeria with the Nigerian Labor Congress, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Sister Shona.
Over the course of this podcast, we've been doing a lot of coverage of Convention C-190, the great new convention at the international level. It's a treaty that says there should be no more violence and harassment in the world of work. One thing we know is that violence and harassment exists in the world of work, and gender-based violence is extremely common in workplaces. You've been doing some surveys and speaking to workers in Lagos and Abuja. I know you spoke to maybe 900 workers or so. I wonder if you could tell us, what were some of the results of that survey? What did you learn when you talked to these workers?
First of all, I would say I'm excited to be on this program and once more to say excited about the convention C-190 and all that it has for us as workers and ensuring that we have a workplace that is free from any form of violence and harassment. And to say that once that convention was adopted, we were excited and we started work immediately. Because before then, we were doing advocacy in support. And once it was adopted, we continued to strengthen that our campaign to make sure ratification. But when we got to the level of discussions as pertaining the ratification, then we had this challenge that we asked people to deny the existence of gender-based violence and harassment in the workplace, even though we know of its prevalence and all of that. So we needed to do something to come out with some evidence to show that it exists. So we decided to do research with the support of the Solidarity Center. The research, there were 19 women that went out for this research. At the end of the day, we were able to interview 919. We were consciously trying to break the silence of this gender-based violence and the lack of awareness that is there. The result that we found was really, really amazing because we now discover that there is no place free from gender-based violence and harassment, that it existed in all. The research results were amazing. No age or sector is free from the menace of gender-based violence. About 7.5% of the 919 women interviewed experienced gender-based violence at work.
57%.
Yes. And then about 52.2% had been threatened either by text messages or on their way to or from work.
Here with his report about union events is Labor Start correspondent Derek Blackadder.
This week, our top story section included links to coverage of the incredibly durable union-led movements for democracy in Belarus and in Sudan. In Belarus, the labor movement last week marked a full year of struggle against what is often called the last dictatorship in Europe. At the same time, Sudanese trade unions continue to be targeted by the military. Dozens of union activists have been arrested, injured, or killed as the mass protests there are not just continuing, but are escalating. We also carried stories about the ongoing analyses by trade unions of the effects, if any, of the COP26 agreement, the announcement of a Black Friday strike against Amazon in 20 countries, how European unions are pushing back against the far-right's attacks, and workers' rights developments in the lead-up to the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. For our Working Women page, our volunteers found stories about the growing anger in New Zealand at the lack of progress towards pay equity. From the 15th of November to the end of the year, New Zealand women will essentially be working for free given the gender pay gap in that country. We also covered the launch of a campaign against gender violence in the workplace by the Center of Indian Trade Unions and what Thai sex workers are doing to make their work safer. A small sample of the stories appearing on our health and safety page in Newswire this week includes coverage of legal decisions regarding mandatory vaccine policies in Canadian, Australian, USian, and French workplaces. We also covered the reaction of Brazilian unions to an attack on occupational health and safety laws and a tribute to education workers and students killed by COVID-19, which was organized last week by a Japanese teachers union. Our photo of the week is from Education International, the global union federation for unions representing education workers around the world. It shows one of the 100,000 unionists and civil society organization members demonstrating outside the COP26 negotiations in Glasgow last week. This is Derek Blackadder from Labor Start, reporting for Radio Labor.
Now here is Union Nation with A Woman's Place.
A woman's place is in her union. We organize and stand for equal rights, hardships and discrimination. Ongoing battles we continue to fight, dedicated to get the job done. A woman's place is in her union, fearless and productive, embracing and strong. I'm a union woman and this is where belong. Union woman, that's what I am. Mother to a future guaranteed to take a stand. A union woman, on me you can depend. I'll lift you up when you need. This world better for the union race, dedicated to get the job done. A woman's place is in her union, fearless and productive, embracing yet strong. I'm a union woman, this is where I belong.
And that's it. Labor news you can use. You can listen to our daily newscasts and features at radiolabor.net. I'm Mark Belanger. Thank you for listening. And remember, it's all about global solidarity.